this as a tax-exempt charity. Among other things, 501c3 status exempts ALEC from reporting any lobbying expenditures or releasing its membership information, but they are also, in the words of the IRS, quote, absolutely prohibited from directly or indirectly participating in or intervening in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for elective public office. End quote. However, one entry in Orastar depicts ALEC engaging in the most unmistakable form of campaign intervention, directly contributing money to a candidate for the Oregon House of Representatives. This candidate was Medford Republican Sal Esquivel. Esquivel was an incumbent at the time, and the year 2009 was not an election year, but that doesn't matter. This is such a blatant violation of tax law that I assumed somebody on the receiving end must have made a mistake. According to a report issued by Common Cause Oregon in 2012, if ALEC were to lose its 501c3 status, it would put a significant damper on the large contributions that they receive from corporate interests, since contributions to a nonprofit are tax deductible. ALEC knows this too. In an email, their senior public affairs director Bill Meyerling told me, quote, let me say once more in no uncertain terms, ALEC does not offer campaign contributions, end quote. In fact, it seems as though ALEC is not really all that interested in making campaign contributions anyway. In documents leaked to the Guardian newspaper last year, ALEC is shown developing a now operational 501c4 organization, the Jeffersonian Project. Even though 501c4s are allowed to make campaign contributions and other expenditures to influence politics, ALEC makes no mention of contributions when discussing the Jeffersonian Project. Instead, the group is focused more on providing a less ethically troublesome avenue for corporations to donate to ALEC's cause and still claim the tax deductions. Nevertheless, the single contribution to Sal Esquivel is a useful point of reference for understanding how ALEC's money moves at the state level and how Oregon campaign finance reporting works in general. I called Rhonda Bohall, the treasurer of the Esquivel campaign, who told me that the alleged contribution was made before she understood ALEC scholarship programs, in which legislators who attend ALEC events can be reimbursed up to a certain amount. She said that the contribution was a reimbursement for Esquivel's expenses at that year's annual meeting at the Hyatt Regency in Atlanta. Wisconsin's Representative Taylor explained the scholarship program and the nature of ALEC events to Mike and Yana in Kansas City.
All of the alcohol and the food was paid for legislators. Legislators come to these ALEC conferences, and first of all, most of them have gotten a corporate-funded scholarship that comes through ALEC, but it is from the corporations. They pay for it. And then legislators get here, and they're wined and dined, and they hobnob with lobbyists and big industry executives and people who will probably become their campaign donors.
Orastar shows several Oregon legislators receiving reimbursements from ALEC. Representatives Esquivel, Wally Hicks, and Sherry Springer, Senator Bill Hansel, and former Representatives Matt Wingard, Linda Flores, and George Gilman. However, these were all labeled as reimbursements, whereas the contribution to Esquivel was unlabeled. Scholarships are capped at even amounts, $500, $1,000, which is why it is not unlikely that the $500 contribution to Esquivel was simply a misfiled reimbursement. It appears that that is in fact the case. However, when we spoke, Esquivel's treasurer emphatically told me that it is not illegal for a 501c3 to make political contributions, as long as they are under a limit and they report them on their Form 990 when they file their tax returns. This isn't true. 501c3s are expressly forbidden by the IRS from giving money to a political campaign under threat of losing their tax-exempt status. Among other things, this is an illustration of a problem with Oregon campaign finance reporting. Individual filings are not vetted by the Secretary of State's office as long as the forms are filled out correctly. For example, no description or purpose is required when filing a cash contribution, but other transactions do require them. For example, all expenditures require a short explanation, which is why we can see legislators using campaign funds to pay for airline tickets, hotels, and meals explicitly related to ALEC conferences. Sometimes when legislators don't pay money directly to ALEC, it's still possible to place them at a conference using these incidental purchases. For example, former Representative Matt Wand, a Troutdale Republican, never used his campaign to pay registration fees for ALEC's 2011 State and Nation Policy Summit in Scottsdale, Arizona, but he did use it to pay for a hotel room in Scottsdale at the time with the simple explanation, lodging slash conference. When I showed the contribution to Esquivel to an investigator with the Oregon Department of Justice's Charitable Activities Division, he said it was illegal, but not in their jurisdiction. When I filed a formal complaint with the IRS, I received no response, and regulations prohibit them from disclosing the progress of an investigation anyway. This is a familiar story. Back in 2012, the watchdog group Common Cause submitted a wide-ranging whistleblower complaint against Alec to the IRS. Their Vice President for Policy and Litigation, Aaron Pearson, spoke to me about the fate of that complaint.
We filed an IRS whistleblower complaint against Alec for tax fraud, for allowing corporations to contribute money to them and obtain tax deductions and claiming on their tax forms that they do zero lobbying when, in fact, we had a lot of evidence about them doing lobbying. We turned in, I think, close to 5,000 pages of documents from whistleblowers and open records requests documenting their lobbying.
What's the current status of that investigation?
So because it was filed as a whistleblower complaint, the IRS is obligated by law to investigate. So we know they're looking into the complaint, but we don't have any idea, you know, what's happening until they reach a conclusion. So it's pretty much a black box in the meantime.
It's up to the Esquivel campaign to file an amended transaction correcting the mistake, but as of this broadcast, it's still there as transaction number 600653. This is Sam Bowman. This piece includes additional reporting by Mike Klepfer, Yana Maximova, Don Merrill, and Sam Smith.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the final La Peña Flamenca de Portland of the season. On September 26th, at the steep and thorny way to heaven, La Peña Flamenca de Portland presents Berto Boyd with Daniel Azcarate and Elena Villa. There will be two performances, one beginning at 7 p.m. and the other at 9:30 p.m. La Peña Flamenca is a not-for-profit cultural association that promotes flamenco performances in Portland. Again, that's La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Friday, September 26th, at the steep and thorny way to heaven on Southeast 2nd Avenue, between Madison and Hawthorne in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:07 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Labor Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I'm your host tonight, John Walsh. Also co-hosting is Jamie Partridge, who you'll hear from later on in the show. Our guest right here with us now in the studio is Elizabeth Swagger, and Elizabeth is the director of the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. Elizabeth, what all is going on in the fair trade world these days?
Thanks, John. It's great to be here. We are up against one of the largest free trade agreements in history with the Trans-Pacific Partnership that's currently being negotiated. If it were to move forward, it would devastate labor for decades to come. We're also going to be holding our 10-year anniversary dinner, and I'm going to tell you more about that later on.
Okay. I guess the basic question for people out there is, why should they care about trade agreements and how they get legislated?
Well, I'd like to start by answering that with a quote by Celeste Drake from AFL-CIO. She's the Trade and Globalization Policy Specialist. She said that if you eat, breathe, sleep, or drink, the Trans-Pacific Partnership affects you. So basically what she meant by that is that there's very few areas of our lives that aren't impacted by today's free trade agreements. I don't think this is going to come as a surprise to any of your listeners. Existing trade policies favor the interests of large corporations at the expense of most people, which has led to a collective race to the bottom in working and living standards in the United States and across the globe. Here in Oregon alone, we've seen over 190,000 jobs lost due to free trade agreements. That number doesn't even account for service sector workers. So it really could be easily double those numbers, because we all know that call centers have been hit hard by free trade agreements, as computer programming jobs and much more industry in Oregon. So trade deals like NAFTA and the WTO, and now the pending TPP, come into being as a result of corporate lobbyists partnering with both Democrats and Republicans, elected officials behind closed doors. The corporate media, when they have covered trade policy at all, have typically repeated propaganda of free trade from corporations that are benefiting the most from the trade deals. Oregon Fair Trade Campaign's really been at the forefront of the trade justice movement here in Oregon for the last 10 years. Our goal is to change U.S. trade policy, which ultimately favors a few people at the very top, into fair trade policy that will put all people and the environment before corporate profits. And we do this, in a couple of ways. One is by coordinating lobbying activities between leaders of our coalition members. It's, labor unions, faith groups, community organizations, human rights activists, folks like that. And, we also do a lot of on-the-ground organizing with community activists through educational events, coordinating phone banks, bird-dogging events, organizing press events, rallies, and other activities to move our targets, which are members of Congress who ultimately have the power to stop a bad trade deal in its tracks.
So far we've had, among others, we've had NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement, deals with Colombia, Peru, Panama. What's on the horizon now? What trade agreements are being considered at this point?
Well, right now the big one is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's currently being negotiated between the United States, Vietnam, Singapore, Malaysia, Brunei, Australia, New Zealand, Chile, Peru, Canada, Mexico, and Japan. So just amongst those 12 countries, this is already way bigger than NAFTA. And it would set the rules of trade for 40% of the total global economy. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership's even more significant because it's being negotiated as what's called a docking agreement, meaning that other countries will be pressured to join on over time. So theoretically, this is open to any country in the Pacific Rim. Negotiations on the trade deal have been going since 2010. So in those 4 years, it's really been behind closed doors. The public has not been allowed to see any of the draft TPP text. In fact, the U.S. forced countries to sign an agreement swearing not to release any of the negotiating documents until 5 years after the negotiations are complete. So in other words, that the people throughout this country and throughout the world who would be most affected by this trade deal don't get to know what's being negotiated in our names or, what's being negotiated away until after the trade deal is passed. And by that time, it's pretty much impossible to make any changes. this lack of transparency in trade negotiations is really unprecedented. It really doesn't benefit anyone but the people at the very top who are, you know, they have the ear of the negotiators already. So people like you and I are being shut out of it, but there are people that have a lot of access to it, and that is the corporate lobbyists. There's about 600 corporate lobbyists that have been given advisory status, and that means that they have full access to the negotiations, and they have the ear of the negotiators. And so, you know, family farmers, our labor unions, environmental organizations, we don't get to know what's being negotiated, but companies like Monsanto, Walmart, Cargill, GM, they're basically writing the rules of this free trade agreement.
Sounds like the 1% solution.
Yeah, I think that's that's a good way of putting it.
Now, what is the process once this agreement is negotiated behind closed doors? What's the process in Congress for approving or disapproving it?
That's a really good question, John. So for the biggest, baddest trade deal, an undemocratic process called fast track's been used to reduce public input and reduce congressional authority on trade. Fast track is federal legislation that's allowed by the executive branch, and basically it ramrods the trade deal through Congress without the ordinary review, amendment, and debates procedures. Under fast track, our senators and our representatives would be limited to an up or down vote on this trade deal. So it doesn't allow for changes to even the most outrageous anti-labor provisions. Fast track actually expired in 2007. And if we want to win on the TPP, we have to keep it retired. So it's up to all of us to make sure that our elected officials in Congress are hearing from us so they don't fast track the TPP. And I want to remind people that this is something that we can definitely win on. Through the power of community organizing, we were able to defeat Fast Track when it was introduced earlier this year by Senator Baucus and Representative Camp. Fair trade advocates across the state and across the country you know, were regularly putting in calls to the representatives. They asked hard trade questions at town hall meetings. They wrote letters, they signed petitions, and many more activities. And because of that work, we were able to get every one of Oregon's Democrats in the House and the Senate to publicly oppose this version of Fast Track in January. You know, this is proof that when we organize, when we put pressure on our elected officials, we can win.
As is the WTO experience for another point of reference for trade, right? Now, how does Oregon specifically factor into this legislative situation?
Well, John, Oregon actually has a very critical role to play in the TPP fight. The president has announced that he wants to introduce a complete TPP during his trip to Asia in November. This is the same time that our very own Senator Ron Wyden, who's the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, this is the committee that's in charge of international trade, plans to introduce a new version of Fast Track, which he's calling Smart Track. We don't know yet what's in Smart Track, since Senator Wyden's bill is not drafted yet. But we're worried that without constituent input, Smart Track may just become another Fast Track in disguise. So that's the concern right now. And I would really urge everyone listening to put a call into Senator Wyden and let him know that as a constituent, you want to know what's in Smart Track, and you want to be sure that it's smart for our families and for our environment. Again, these are things that we can definitely win on. They seem massive. You know, you're up against these multinational corporations, the largest corporations in the world. But as you said, we've won before. And it's when people get together, you have face-to-face conversations with people, and you start getting them to reach out to their representatives as well, we can make a big difference on this. So, you know, I urge you all not to feel discouraged. This is something that we can definitely do.
Now, one of the ways to have those face-to-face conversations probably is this dinner you told us about earlier. So how about some more detail about the anniversary dinner?
Absolutely. So I'd like to invite everyone listening to join Oregon Fair Trade Campaign's 10-year anniversary celebration. It's going to be on a wonderful dinner on October 18th, a Saturday, at 6 o'clock at SEIU 503. We're going to be awarding Senator Jeff Merkley as a fair trade champion. We'll also be toasting our success with Oregon's most dedicated fair trade advocates, as well as our very renowned keynote speaker, Lori Wallach. She's the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. And Lori is a Harvard-trained lawyer who's been at the forefront of the fair trade movement for over 25 years. She's really a powerhouse when it comes to standing up for the public interest in international trade agreements. She was instrumental in derailing the WTO during the Battle of Seattle in 1999. So we're so glad to have her. We feel very honored. Hope that you will join us as well. And again, it's Saturday, October 18th. Doors will open at 5:30. The event will start at 6. And it's at SEIU 503, their hall on 64th and Foster in Southeast Portland.
If people want to know more about either that event or trade issues generally, how do they contact the Fair Trade Campaign?
Well, they can go to www.oregonfairtrade.org. And if people are interested in volunteering for this event or other events, they can reach the Oregon Fair Trade Office at 503-736-9777. And I would just like to thank some of our coalition partners that made this dinner possible. They include AFSCME, Council 75, Alliance for Democracy, AWPPW, the Carpenters, Citizen Trade Campaign, Communication Workers of America, Machinists, SEIU 503, Teamsters, United Food and Commercial Workers, and the Steel Workers.
Labor definitely in the house that night, huh?
Absolutely.
Okay. One more time, what was that contact info?
So that contact info is Oregon Fair Trade Campaign's website, www.oregonfairtrade.org. And you can reach the office by calling 503-736-9777.
And what was that one thing you wanted people to do?
I want everyone here to put in a call, even tonight, to Senator Wyden and let him know that we're counting on him to make Smart Track smart for working families.
Thank you, Elizabeth Swagger, Director of the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign, for educating us about fair trade and about the dinner and what we can do to make a difference in the future with our own Senator Ron Wyden. The second half of our show is going to feature interviews that Jamie Partridge recorded yesterday at Portland's Climate March, the smaller version of the massive one that took place in New York City the same day. Before we go to that, let me mention that you can catch this show archived or any other show at www.kboo.fm. So if people miss the show, you want them to hear it, have them go there and listen to it afterwards or refer it back when it's useful information for you. And let's see what Jamie recorded yesterday at the Climate March.
So we're here just south of the Hawthorne Bridge as the labor contingent gathers for the today's Climate March, and I'm talking with Barbara Byrd, Secretary of the Oregon AFL-CIO. Barbara, why are you here today?
I'm here to show organized labor's support for efforts to solve the climate crisis.
Why is it important for labor movement to be involved in that?
So, Jamie, I think our members care about climate change and want their unions to be part of solving the problem. I think that our members know how to do the work that it's going to take to solve the problem. We've got trained electricians who can install solar panels and plumbers and fitters who can do geothermal projects. I mean, we've got the people who need the work that are earning a family wage that can do what we need to do to mitigate and adapt to climate change. And I think also we have built some strong alliances with environmental groups in this town, and this is our way of working with them on a goal that we all share.
What kind of representation do you expect today here in Portland from the labor movement and actually in New York City, where there are 100,000 people gathered?
Well, there are a number of international unions that have endorsed the march in New York City, as you know. Here in Portland, there's a handful of unions, frankly, that have endorsed. Only a handful, but I think that it is the first time that I know of that labor has actually actively supported an environmental action of this scale. And Tom Chamberlain, the state Fed president, will be speaking at the rally, which is, I think, got to be a first and very exciting. So there, it's small but growing support, I think, for this work.
And what's your message to working people and union members in particular who are listening to the show about how to carry on this struggle?
Wow. Well, I think that staying informed about what's going to be happening in the legislature in this next session is really important. There are a whole bunch of environmental bills that are going to be being heard, among them the Clean Fuels Bill and perhaps a carbon tax. So staying on top of that. If people are interested in the Blue-Green Alliance, they can send me an email, call me up, and I'll be glad to fill people in on what the Blue-Green Alliance is doing here in the state. And then I think just stepping outside their comfort zone and talking to people from the environmental movement that maybe they don't normally talk with, great way to build relationships and find out more about what's going on.
All right, Barbara Byrd, Secretary Treasurer, Oregon AFL-CIO, and check out the Blue-Green Alliance. And how do people get a hold of Barbara Byrd?
They can send me an email, barbara@orafl-cio.org.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm here talking with Jim Cook, past president of the Letter Carriers Union here in Portland, Oregon. Jim, why are you here today?
I'm here today in solidarity with sisters and brothers to declare our opposition to the continued detriment of our planet, and we are here today to celebrate life in general and solidarity. I'm also here today because I want to make a statement as a union activist. As a letter carrier, we're outside a lot of the hours of our workday and thus exposed to Mother Nature. And we've seen the changes, the direct changes from climate change already, the adversities. And so we are having incidences of skin cancer and other detrimental things, health detriment. So we want to see the reversal of our current dependence on fossil fuels and get more of us taking individual steps to reduce our carbon imprint, and that of, for example, a postal service could go to electric vehicles so easily. And they used to have electric vehicles in parts of California and other arid places. So we're looking at change here. And today we're making a statement that we must change to save Mother Earth.
Why do you think it's particularly important for the labor movement to be involved in this movement to stop climate change?
Well, I've been a labor activist for about 40 years, so I've seen the war against labor, war against the workers, but there's a war against the planet and Mother Nature as well. And so we, as workers, need to understand that, you know, our families, our future generations depend upon the resources that are left, which are fewer and fewer, and yet we're using them up as if there's no end. So I think workers need to become more educated, and I am definitely trying to do that personally. I'm part of a group called Climate Jobs Committee.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the Climate Jobs Committee?
Yeah, the Climate Jobs Committee is made up of union activists, both active and retired, as well as other community members. And our focus is to try to do positive steps toward addressing climate change. That's both education as well as direct involvement in projects such as when the Musicians Union, which I'm also a member of, the Musicians Union Local 99 installed solar collectors, photovoltaic panels up on the Union Hall. And so we had a celebration. The Climate Jobs Committee was directly involved in that.
How do our listeners get in touch with the Climate Jobs Committee if they want to get involved?
The phone number is 503-286-5850.
Anything else you want to leave with our listeners, particularly members of labor, of unions, but also just members of the working class in general?
Yes, that we're all in this together, and together we shall overcome, because I hate to say it, but it's all about unbridled capitalism crushing us all, including Mother Earth.
Thank you, Jim Cook, past president of NALC Branch 82 Letter Carriers Union here in Portland. I'm here with Alana Gwinney, who's the communications director of the Oregon AFL-CIO. And I understand the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, Tom Chamberlain, is going to be speaking today here at the Climate March. What's that about?
You know, climate change is an issue that affects all people, but it affects working people the most, frankly. You know, we see people across the country losing their jobs because of climate change, in the forests, in fishing, in all sorts of natural resource industries. And we see folks losing their jobs when action against to prevent climate change isn't done in a way that preserves jobs well. So labor needs to be part of this conversation to make sure that we're standing up for the people who did the least to cause this problem, working people, and making sure that our solutions are protecting our jobs and making for a more sustainable, both environmentally and economically, economy for all of us. We have to be part of the solution.
And how is the Oregon AFL-CIO getting involved?
We've had conversations quite a bit for the last couple of years, and they're actually, you know, heating up with our partners in the environmental movement in Portland around how we can work together for solutions in Oregon. We try to support each other's work. We've been supporting, you know, various policies to help combat climate change in Oregon. And nationally, the labor movement's doing the same thing. So we've got to keep those conversations up, and we've got to be taking action.
Anything else you want to say to our listeners, particularly union members?
You know, I know there's a lot of people who are out here today. I want to thank everybody for being involved, and I would just encourage everybody in the labor movement to talk to their friends who, you know, are active in environmental causes and find those places of common ground where we can find good solutions together.
Thank you, Alana Gwinney, Oregon AFL-CIO. I'm here talking with Rob Nose, who's a representative of in the Oregon State House and currently a representative with the Oregon Nurses Association.
Yes, sir.
And a former organizer with Service Employees Union. Rob, why are you here today?
Because climate change is going to affect working people. It's going to affect all people. And if we don't find a way to mitigate it in a meaningful way, working people are going to see a lot of problems in their lives and for their families.
What do you hope to accomplish in the